Hello, 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 Power Kids, and welcome to another Power Kid podcast. Guys, every episode, it is my joy, honor, and privilege to come on here to share conversations with you, with great people from all over the world making great things for kids. My name is Phil Albritton, and I am your host. I am super excited about our guest today. Lee Allen Tuck is on the mic. Lee has done it all. Global gaming at Hasbro, licensing marketing lead for Lego, founder at Raising Nerd, innovation scout for Melissa and Doug, and head of content at The Last Game Board. In addition, he's the innovation scout for Blue Marble. He has touched everything from brand development to marketing campaigns to inventor relations. And of course, it all started at a cell phone company. Lee, welcome to the show.
Hey, Phil, man. Thanks so much for having me.
What a blast we're going to have. And this may be a 5 hour long show, Lee. I don't know. We may just keep rolling, keep the cameras rolling.
I don't even know if we'll end up talking about work. You and I just like talking. And that intro is like such a, it's such a throwback. Like I've been around, I've had like multiple careers, and it's funny that like the only thing I talk about these days is toys and games, but I was doing sports and entertainment PR early in my career. And as you said, I was at a startup, and then I went to a cell phone company where I was doing branding and communications. So yeah, I feel like I've got multiple careers I could go into for you.
Well, I love that because there's such cross-pollination, I think, between different categories and different brands. And so we're going to draw all of that out of you and figure out what does cell phones have to do with the toy industry?
Well, I mean, sometimes I feel like nothing, but it must have done something because it's like, you know, when I went to Hasbro, they seemed to like my background. There was a connection. But, you know, cell phones, when I started off working at Nextel, it was a very niche organization. It was very entrepreneurial, small compared to like the Verizons and AT&Ts of the world. And we were known for like the push-to-talk technology, well, walkie-talkie technology. And it was really about the innovation or about instant communication and connecting with people. And if you think about toys and games, it's really about connecting with people, connecting with experiences, and innovation. What I do is really try to find innovative ways of doing that on different kinds of categories, different kinds of brands, and different kinds of licenses.
What were some of the innovations that were coming out of the cell phone industry at that time? And how are you trying to connect with your customers? And then link that into toys and then how, you know, Hasbro brings you in for global gaming. It's about connecting people.
It's completely about connecting people, or people connecting to each other or the things they love. And that's really always been my driver when it comes to games and toys as well. When I was at Nextel, this was pre-iPhone. And so we didn't have like all the stuff we have in our phones today. You know, this is a while back. And I remember when iPhone was announced and it was like a huge, huge deal. So, you know, for us, our biggest thing was about this walkie-talkie button, letting people connect to each other, letting them have instant communication. If you got to get an answer quick, you got to push the button, say, "Hey, Phil, where are we on this?" And you would reply. It's not like dialing up and, you know, calling somebody back then. And texting was not a big thing in the U.S. It was bigger in Europe, but it wasn't big here. And so really came down to our clientele, our customers were the frontline workers, the blue collar workers, the police, fire and rescue. It was construction workers. It was contractors and people on the street and you know, lifting shovels and throwing hammers. And so that instant connection was not just important to get things done, but it was also important to help save lives. And that's really what our theme became, is really about getting things done. And it was a great campaign because it wasn't just our customers that were getting things done. We called ourselves doers internally. Like we were the cell phone company that got things done. And it came down to so many different ways that we marketed it. We had bought the NASCAR title sponsorship, and it just translated so well to that end, to that fan base. It was about fast communications, getting things done. and a finish line. That's what our logo actually became, was a finish line.
That's great. You know, it's so interesting to think back about the history of technology. Things move so fast and you don't realize, you know, things that were really innovative at that time, that push button technology. And we kind of feel like that's archaic now, but you know, you just really respect the people that make that happen and find that market niche at that place and time. And I think it's very important to go back and remember that history to inform what we're doing now today. Yeah. Super important.
Well, it's not, even to touch on that thread, it wasn't necessarily that it was a new innovative technology. Walkie-talkies have been around for 100 years, right? It was really that nobody else was doing it. It was a differentiator for us, and being able to use, you know, what we had technology-wise, which the reason we were able to use the push-to-talk technology and nobody else wanted it was because they looked at it, it wasn't as good in their minds. They didn't see the potential of it. But we were also using a spectrum, a cellular spectrum that nobody else could use. And we had pieced it together. And what was seen as a weakness actually became very much a competitive advantage.
That is a great point. I love the concept of taking technology that already exists and repurposing it and rebranding it. And we do this all the time in toys, right? Maybe even without realizing it. But you can take a TPR a ball of strands that's sort of a fidget toy and turn that into Soggy Doggy, right? A great game hit. So take us into Hasbro. How did they bring you in? What were you put over in their global gaming category?
Yeah. No, it's funny because I had just moved to Western Massachusetts with my wife and my kids. We wanted to be closer to her family. And I was commuting with Nextel, where we had just merged with Sprint. I was commuting back and forth to Kansas City to every other week. And that gets grueling. And so I had friends that worked at Hasbro Games, which is literally a mile and a half from my house. And they were looking for somebody to do licensed games. And because I had worked on sponsorships and licenses for the cell companies and have been in sports and entertainment in other parts of my career, it was actually not a bad fit, right? I knew nothing of toys and games other than I worked in a toy store when I was in high school and kind of came full circle. But they had brought me in to manage all of the partnerships with Disney, with DreamWorks, with Nickelodeon, and manage the puzzle business, and then also try to find new opportunities either with homegrown IPs or go in the back of the archives and find something and renew it.
How fun was that to dig into the back archives at Hasbro and pull out those old hits? Tell me about some of the hot products that you worked on back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, it was really exciting. For a couple of different reasons. My kids were young, and to be able to say I worked for a toy and game company was like, you know, dream come true for them. They are the ones who actually profited more than anybody. My kids were like into Star Wars, getting action figures. They were into my, you know, Little's Pet Shop and all that. But on the game side, you know, Milton Bradley and Parker Brothers, some of the biggest names in board games in history. So having those kind of at your fingertips to be able to leverage and utilize, whether it's like a SpongeBob Monopoly or a Shrek operation, you know, we tried not to do just a logo slap. We tried to put something on there that was tied to those great properties and connect to fans. And it was really, I thought it was just an awesome place to be at an awesome time. Licensing was growing for Hasbro at that time, where the toy business was focused on a lot of their own categories. The games business had opportunities to kind of do a number of different things. It was by far the largest game company in the world.
Let's break that down, Lee. I want to talk about that. You've got a fan base that is Monopoly on one side, and you've got a fan base that is SpongeBob on the other.
It's a dream come true. Are you kidding?
And you're tasked to bring those together. Yeah. How do you know when you're dealing with two fan bases that will actually merge? You can create a product that, that brings them all together.
Yeah.
And the Monopoly fan's going to buy in because it's Monopoly, and the SpongeBob fan is going to buy in because it's SpongeBob, and we're all going to get along. How do you set that out in the beginning?
It's, you know, at the time, like, I think SpongeBob was in their 20th anniversary or something like that. It was something crazy. And we had done the remake of the SpongeBob Monopoly. It was a huge success before, and bringing it back for the anniversary was massive. In fact, I think it was the top selling licensed Monopoly of all time up until that point. I don't know what adds it now, but we did like lenticular eyes on the cover that matched, you know, SpongeBob blinking and winking, you know, on the packaging. So it was a huge success, and it's, you know, Monopoly translates over to so many different fan bases. It's really, honestly, it's I don't think it's brain surgery when you put those two brands together, you know.
Perfect fit. Just pick the locations, make the little pewter figures, build a good package around it, and you're off to the races. That's
completely
great.
We did the same with Shrek when I think it was Shrek 3 coming out. We did Shrek Operation. And again, Shrek Operation originally had been a success, but doing it for a new movie really, you know, played into DreamWorks marketing and everything like that. So, yeah, I think it's when it comes to, you know, matching licenses with products, and this is what I've seen throughout my whole career, you hit it on the head, is that you need to be able to match the fan base. There needs to be a connection. It can't be just some obscure two things thrown together, because fans, they see through that. They see that as a money grab. They see it as a label slap. But if you find two things that fit nicely together, it can really be a powerful connection and experience for the fans.
Absolutely. Maybe like, I don't know, Lego and Batman. How does that sound?
I think the Dark Knight's a perfect example.
That seems like a pretty good fit. So from strength to strength, now you are brought into Lego to help with their licensing program. And you're there at the release of the Lego movies, the Batman Lego movie, and all of these big, big things that are happening at Lego at that time. So take us there. Tell us about your experience there.
Actually, my arrival to Lego predates the movies. I got there and it was kind of a, you know, not a good time for Lego licensing. They had a European head and a US head, and they did global deals and US deals. And it was very complex. And the Danes do not like complexity when it comes to business. They like very much keeping it very streamlined. And so my job coming in was really looking at all the deals, all the partnerships we had for third-party manufacturers, and figure out, okay, why do we have all these deals? Which categories make sense? And how do we do more with less? And so it was kind of a tough time to come in and basically, you know, kill a lot of deals. Ones that either weren't bringing a return on the resources that we were, you know, spending, that we were utilizing internally in the expenses that we had with them. Some didn't match our brand, as we just talked about. Sort of a mismatch, and some that just didn't feel like, yeah, this isn't working, you know? So I had to go in, we had to do a full evaluation of every deal, and there were a lot of deals. We cut, I think, 2/3 of all our partnerships and really focused in on just a handful of categories and a handful of partnerships. And it was very, you know, it was a tough time to tell somebody who had gotten this Lego license to help build their business, but telling them that we're not going to go forward. But what it actually did was allow us to focus on the real value added ones. It wasn't necessarily just about money. It was more about what is right for the Lego brand. And so building those experiences around that, we actually grew the business with less licensees.
Lee, I want to dig into that. Can you give us an example of a brand that you cut that was not a fit with Lego? That's very interesting to me.
Yeah, Lego is a family-owned business, and the family is very involved in it. And when it comes to Lego, the product or the brand, it's like a child to them, you know. And so they're very, very protective over it, and they're also very protective over the trust that, you know, is given to them by the kids and the parents that play with Lego, that love Lego. And so one of the areas that we had to focus on was food. You know, Lego pieces or elements, as they call them, are very small. There was candy done as Lego. There was waffles done as Lego, and things like that. And so we had to standardize across the board that we weren't going to do any food or edible type products. We also, you know, looked at shoes and diapers and things like that, that really, you know, it's great branding for some companies and some brands to have your logo on a little kid's behind as a diaper, but we didn't see that as a positive for our brand, you know, and so there's a lot of money we've left on the table because we wanted to make sure that we kept true to the brand. So fast forward, when we had a, you know, an opportunity to do our first movie, the Lego movie with Warner Brothers, our partnership with Warner Brothers stated that we would share in the strategy and the managing of partners around the movie. And a big part of any movie is going to be a food-based products, right? Going to like quick serve, like McDonald's or Burger King or whatever. And so we had to find common ground that would allow us to do licensing with a fast food restaurant that would, you know, not necessarily go against everything, you know, that we believe in, but also making good on that partnership with Warner Brothers.
Yeah. And I think what I saw, some mini puzzles in tins come out of that deal.
Yeah. We had lenticular cups was one of them.
Yes,
right.
Yes. And, you're right. Right.
And things like that. So it wasn't necessarily things that you would mix up as food or candy or treats. It was more about helping you eat and drink and enjoy the movie.
That's it. So the movie aspect of this, talk about balancing a brand activation during a movie, and all of the Lego movies, to my knowledge, have been really phenomenal successes, very well received. Talk about, you know, what kind of products you want to release during the stint of the movie. What are you saying? How are you driving people to the theaters and then through the checkout?
Yeah, I mean, it was our first movie. We had done TV shows before, and TV shows are a little easier because you don't really get behind the licensing until they take off and they become a hit. A movie, you're building the product as the movie's being created, and you know, you get to a point where you've got to give third-party manufacturers, right, time to make the products, design the products, make the products, sell in the products, manufacture the products, and get them to shelf. For us, that was like very quick, even though the movie takes a good 3 years to make. But our challenge was not necessarily getting people to believe in the movie. I think everybody saw this as it was going to be pretty cool. And so retailers getting behind it was not a difficult thing. We looked at, you know, which categories we were in as part of our strategy. We didn't want to venture too far outside of there. We stayed very strong in apparel, t-shirts and, you know, underwear and, you know, jackets and things like that. Publishing was always a very big part. That was our largest category. We got into some hard goods like, you know, like little LED light ups, stationery and things like that. So, and then bedding is always a big one as well. So we really stayed very tight on our licensing strategy. Our partners at Warner Brothers wanted us to kind of push it further because that's the side of their business that they're experts in. And we probably left a lot of money on the table, but it gave us an opportunity to come back for the second movie and the third, and I think the fourth movie. You know, it kept growing and growing.
That's fantastic. I'm going to switch gears a little bit here, Lee.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about you and you growing your audience with Raising Nerd. Tell me about the origin of that idea and the STEM and STEAM focus of Raising Nerd, and why that's important to you.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've got kids, my son and my daughter, they're older now. But when they were younger, my son was really into science, really into engineering. And I was, you know, really into kind of being a part of that. And when I got, you know, when he was young, I wanted to get into coding and learn how to do engineering. And I'm the least qualified person to teach that. so I found, you know, believe it or not, first LEGO League, which is a robotics program, a global robotics program, where kids design and build robots, and they go in, they do competition. So it's like literally a competitive robotics. And we decided to start a team, and it was like, it was fantastic. But as I was going on and on about that, parents would come to me and ask me, like, where do I get my kid into coding? How do I get my kid into more STEM stuff? And I found that, like, there were lots of stuff out there, but I don't think it related to parents very well. And I started running a blog around this idea that you can raise your own nerd, and nerd is a positive a name to call your kids. Nerds will end up ruling the world, as we say today.
You know, that's right.
I think it actually was really kind of a perfect timing to start that. And I got to interview and meet so many different people from all walks of life, and interviewing how they took their passion as a kid in STEM in some sorts, whether they were into astronomy or building things or inventing things. And it kind of like matched where I wanted to go with my career. The blog was just kind of an offshoot that helped me get into, you know, help my kids, help other kids, but also kind of gave me a real good insight into, you know, toys and games and inventions.
How cool is that? Just starting that, really starting it for your kids. I love that story.
Well, and it's still going. Like, I don't do the blog anymore, but it actually, the robotics team grew into something much bigger. I've been 10 years now doing robotics, running a robotics program in my hometown. We've got 30 kids at the high school. They are award-winning robotics program. We have a lot of fun. We've got mentors and we've got sponsors, and every year we put up a really cool robot for a competition. It's becoming a bigger thing out in our area, which is fantastic.
Well done. Well done. And that yeah. You know, that level of technology, those kids are learning skills and building interests that are going to help them into the future. And maybe one of them will build, you know, some piece of technology that'll help board gamers, you know, port games into their houses on a tablet and play Dungeons and Dragons digitally. But also
we already invented that. It's called Game Board. It's already
done. Is that a thing? So just another pivot for Lee here. The last Game Board. This is an extremely innovative piece of technology. I have watched it from first announcement to where it is now, and it just continues to grow and be very, very exciting. I kind of brand it the Netflix of board games, if that's fair. But
That's exactly what I call it. I think it's fantastic. I love this thing. I've been working with the company for 3 years. And it fits perfectly into kind of my background, where I feel like the secret of my success isn't knowledge of anything in particular, but it's more my network of people that I've gotten to know throughout the years, and working with the Game Board team and bringing publishers over to say, hey, you know, trust us with your brands, trust us with your games. We'll make it really cool and downloadable and bring more people into the community of gaming. And it's been a fantastic ride so far.
Absolutely. What are you looking for in publishers to bring into Game Board? What do they have to bring to the table? Do they have to have an established, you know, community of players? What do you look for?
Well, we're looking for great game experiences. This started off as like, you know, almost like a RPG or deep strategy game going after the hobby fans, right? You know, they're incredibly faithful. They are passionate about games. They spend lots and lots of money and time and effort and resources on the games and game night. And what we have found is, they come to Game Board to play the RPGs and deep strategy games, but they're staying for the party games, the card-based games, the light strategy games, things that like they can have people over, throw down some pizza, maybe a couple drinks, and be able to download a new game and play. So we're looking for just great game experiences. We're not necessarily looking right now for the family-based games that I used to work on at Hasbro. Those are fantastic games, but I don't think that's this audience. I think this audience is really looking for some of those favorite games that they see and play all the time, but they're also looking for new game and game experiences.
Yeah. Well, and finding new innovative ways to play the game because of what the new technology unlocks, I think is really, really an interesting place
Totally. We can't just take a carbon copy of the physical cardboard game and put it in, you know, on a tablet. I think that's a waste of people's time and energy. And there's a lot of offerings for that already. So we don't need to do that. What we need to do is utilize our technology to be able to use real physical pieces on a digital game board, to be able to use your app and, you know, your companion app on your phone or your tablet or your computer, so you can connect with anybody in the world to be able to play on your tablet when they're there across the board or down the street or around the world, and be able to enhance the game through the technology, make it fun, make it interesting, make it, you know, add a couple twists here and there, but not get too far away from the actual game itself, what its intention was. But yeah, we don't want to just take a physical game and just put it on a digital version of it. I don't think that does anybody justice.
Right. No, high technology. So if I'm tracking the path here, Lee, you know, you're going from brand experiences to games, to technology, high technology, and then to wooden toys with Melissa and Doug, the most, you know, what you say that is the most basic of the basic, but what I think is the most important of the important, that type of product, the Melissa and Doug style product, that is just critical for young development, for mind and body, and you're searching for innovation for them. Yeah. And so I want to talk about that. And then also with Blue Marble and finding innovation for those companies. So let's talk about those two. And, you know, what are you seeing? What are you looking for? Who are you talking to? And then tell us about some of the successes.
Yeah, I mean, Melissa & Doug is a classic brand. It's been around for 30 plus years. In fact, I remember when I was working in that toy store in high school, like that, they had their own section of puzzles. And it was, you know, these very thick wooden puzzles. They're beautiful, very well done. And they're sort of the hand-me-down type of product, right? Much like Lego, is that it can go from one kid to the next kid to the next kid, or one generation to the next generation and still hold up. It's your classic developmental type toys. And Melissa and Doug, I think for years, has been very much looking at how to innovate with what they do. But they don't want to get far away from their brands. And it's really, it's a challenge. And it's not meant to be a ding on the brand at all. It means that they are very much believe in what they deliver. And when you're looking for innovation, you can't just add bells and whistles for the sake of adding bells and whistles. Although bells and whistles on wooden toys would be a great enhancement. But it's a tough one, because for 30 plus years, they've been doing almost everything in games or toys and puzzles when it comes to wooden toys and things like that. So I've been meeting with inventors for the last few years, and we find some cool stuff that really resonates with the brand. We find some stuff that doesn't resonate with the brand, and we just keep searching. So it's not always going to be a slam dunk. It's something that we have to keep pushing and driving inventors crazy and designers crazy. But when we find it, it really is a solid payoff.
100%. Well, and then bringing in those great brands like Paw Patrol, like Blue's Clues, into the fold. And it's a really nice mix to develop some really great products.
So. Yeah, they do a good job, and they're starting to get more into licensing. And again, I think they just have such a talented crew of product designers and marketers over there that it's, you know, I think, again, like finding the right experience for that brand. It's a challenge, but we've been doing it.
Very exciting. And then Blue Marble, which is, I love this company, very STEM based. Again, going back to Raising Nerd, this is right in your wheelhouse, very STEM based, National Geographic licensing programs that they have over there. Yeah. What are you looking for?
Yeah, Jordan Willing started this company, I think, 10 plus years ago, and he's a rock hound. He loves geology, and he somehow turned it into a business, a toy business, starting off with, like, you know, really unique offerings, I think, much more valuable experience than what was out there in the marketplace when you're doing, like, digging fossil toys and experiences. What we are looking for is fun experiences, toys and games and activities that still help you learn. And, you know, the National Geographic is such a great brand. 30% of all their licensing profits go to support the National Geographic Society.
That's right.
Which goes to, you know, help education, worthwhile programs on conservation and animal habitats and things like that. So it feels good to be a part of that, but it's a super strong brand. It stands for a great deal. And Blue Marble and Jordan have just been so good about looking at innovation, finding innovation, and bringing it to the marketplace through the inventor community. And we continue to grow that.
Yeah, let's talk about the inventor community. You mentioned it. You've seen a ton of product pitches. What do you look for in a product? What do you look for in a pitch? How do you know when it's going well? What are some of the common mistakes? We've got a huge listenership of inventors that tune into the show and love this question. Take it away.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. And you know, I've been doing this for quite some time, and I've worked with, you know, all kinds of inventors, people that have, you know, just starting out and people that have been around for longer than my career. And so I think the first and biggest thing is, like, you know that it's a match. When you're presenting to one company or one brand, make sure the product is in line with that brand and you know, it's a match. It goes back to the licensing that we were talking about, you know, making sure that the experience that you're bringing will fit nicely within what the expectation from the customer base. There's so much trust between the end user or the consumer and the brand. You want to make sure that that trust is still there when they open the box and they're not disappointed. I think the other piece is, which I think is, you know, still yet important, is what are the insights that got you to that idea? We want to hear it. We want to understand, like, well, I was frustrated when my kid couldn't do this, and that's how I came up with this. Or, you know, I see that this is a growing trend for teachers or parents. And, you know, it's really important to kind of connect those dots for us. We see so many inventions and talk to so many people. It's a good reminder. Don't assume that we know why you invented this or who it's for. So bring us those insights. Help us connect those dots. And then, I always like to tell them, like, think about where we would go. This is a nice product for now. What am I going to do in year two? What am I going to do in year three? Is it, you know, could I apply this? Could I grow this into a line? Does this become a license afterwards or whatever? How do I make this more than just a one-hit wonder? And giving us those ideas, not necessarily that we have to go down that path for that product or that concept, but it gives us an idea that this is a bigger opportunity than just one item.
I love that. Well, I love this idea that you first hit on. Think about when they open the box. Are you delivering the brand experiences, the brand experience that the manufacturer wants to deliver? Think about when the customer opens the box. And what that requires of the inventor is to think that process all the way through. Even if what you have in your hand is a kit-bashed prototype, you have to think about that experience all the way through and do that heavy lifting for the manufacturer and then inspire them to let them see how that fits their brand. I really like that. And I think that's a conversation that more inventors should be having, is think it through all the way to the shelf, all the way to the customer's hands, all the way to Christmas morning. How does it feel?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I have to be reminded of it as well. You know, I'm a steward of the brands as well, and making sure that what I do is not breaking that trust and making sure that we are. And I try to do that every time. Every time I have an interaction with an inventor, I'm trying to be professional, making sure that they know I have the brand's best interest, but I'm a trustworthy person that you can bring ideas to. And if it's the right idea, we'll jump on it and we'll make it and work with you. If it's not the right idea, I'm going to be honest and tell you. It's not right because it doesn't fit the brand. It's not right because we've seen this before and maybe it didn't work, or maybe it's not right at this time. There's all these different reasons, but my goal is to make sure I'm communicating to you how to make your pitch better next time. Not with this concept necessarily, but your next concept or whatever. I think that's hugely important. And then The last thing I was going to say, and I try to help give this feedback, you know, there's a lot of, like I said, a lot of professional vendors have been doing this a long time and they're really good at it. And then new people coming in, I think the challenge is, yes, you're new. This is an idea that you have. You're very passionate about it. You're probably putting a ton of your life behind it. Help yourself out and try to come across as professional as possible. Do the small things that help you come across that we know you're serious so that we invite you back to the pitch, right? Small things like create a good PowerPoint template when you present it. Create a solid video. It doesn't have to be thousands of dollars investment in it. It could be just you with your iPhone and edit it together. You know, have a logo for your company, have a domain, create a small website or a web page, just so we know that we're dealing with somebody that is serious about this business. And I can trust that I'm going to bring you in to meet my client, the person paying me, and that you're going to do a good job. You almost kill yourself by not taking those little steps to show that you're for real.
That is some great advice, Lee. And you are absolutely a champion and a friend to inventors, toy industry champion.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
You really are. And congratulations on your Mojo Top 100 recognition.
You too.
Well done on that. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, look at us, a couple of award winners. Who knew?
In that club and just love the guys at Mojo for what they do to support everyone. Lee, this has been an absolute blast. I really do feel like later in the year, we're going to have you back. We're going to pick some other topics to cover because there is so much I think that you and I can talk about. But for the time being, how can people reach out to you, find out more about what you do, get involved, and learn from you?
Oh, I'm super easy to get a hold of. It's lee@allentuck.com. Or you can go to my website, rnbranding.com. Or you can look me up on LinkedIn.
On LinkedIn. Guys, reach out. Lee is a immensely valuable resource and just a great, great friend. So thanks, Lee. Again, we're going to have you back on. But for now, thanks for coming on. This has been a blast.
No, thank you so much, man. This has been a blast. I love talking to you.
We'll talk to you soon.
Take care, man.
Thank you for tuning in to the Power Kid podcast. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Leave 5 stars and a written review as this helps us connect with more listeners just like you. Once you're subscribed, you'll be able to check out the other shows from Adventure Media and Events. And a big thank you to them. They are the publishers of the Toy Book, the Toy Insider, and the Pop Insider. We've got you covered on all toy industry news and events. This show is produced by Power Kid Design and Development. We are a full-service toy and game development studio serving the industry for more than 20 years. We provide illustration, branding, packaging, sculpting, prototyping, consulting, and much more. Check out powerkiddesign.com or email me at phil@powerkiddesign.com. Now go out and make something great, and remember, you are creative because you were created. God bless, and I'll see you next episode.